Now, in the US, it's down to the nitty-gritty and the campaign proper now that the last of the televised debates is over. It happened in Boca Raton in Florida. Last night, foreign policy was the issue at hand, an issue that you'd have expected the president to be a little more comfortable with than the contender, Mitt Romney. I'm joined in studio by Samuel Brazis of the School of Politics and International Relations at UCD, who watched the debate. How would you characterize the debate, first of all, Sam?
Well, thanks, Pat. It's good to be in again. Certainly a much less contentious debate than there always saw in the second debate. You know, this is obviously an area that's going to play to the president's strength, but also an area that, you know, really doesn't necessarily speak to a broad swath of the U.S. electorate, you know, as unfortunate as that may be.
Now, in the first debate, we know that Obama was blindsided a bit by Mitt Romney turning up and having moved dramatically to the center, very close to a lot of Obama's policies. And Obama clearly had done his homework on the Tea Party version of Mitt, and he got a different one, and it completely flummoxed him. Last night, it appears that Mitt Romney also sort of moved towards a lot of the president's existing foreign policies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the real story of this debate has or of the series of debates, rather, has been Mitt Romney moving to the center, really to sort of speak to these undecided voters who largely tend to be in the middle. And, you know, with foreign policy, especially, the old adage is, of course, that, you know, politics stops at the water's edge. You know, and we see this not only in this cycle, but really in all previous presidential cycles, that when it comes to foreign policy, Republicans, Democrats end up having pretty similar positions.
Yeah. Now, we know that there have been different emphases, for example, with the Bush-Cheney administration and Donald Rumsfeld. I mean, they had a very different tactical view, shall we say, which was not successful.
Absolutely. And you know, clearly throughout the debate last night, Mitt Romney was trying to distance himself from the Bush-Cheney, you know, sort of neocon doctrine. You know, he repeatedly emphasized, you know,
that he wasn't
Bush and Cheney, and that, you know, that military options in Syria or even in Iran, you know, were things that he would not want to pursue as a first matter of course.
Let's have a listen to this interesting exchange, which brought a little fire to the debate.
We're going to have to recognize that we have to do as the president's done. I congratulate him on taking out Osama bin Laden and going after the leadership in al-Qaeda. But we can't kill our way out of this mess.
Governor Romney, I'm glad that you recognize that al-Qaeda is a threat. Because a few months ago, when you were asked what's the biggest geopolitical threat facing America, you said Russia. Not al-Qaeda. You said Russia. In the 1980s are now calling to ask for their foreign policy back because, you know, the Cold War has been over for 20 years. But, Governor, you know, when it comes to our foreign policy, you seem to want to import the foreign policies of the 1980s, just like the social policies of the 1950s and the economic policies of the 1920s. You say that you're not interested in duplicating what happened in Iraq, but just a few weeks ago you said you think we should have more troops in Iraq right now.
I'm sure a lot of the people were a bit baffled, you know, 20s, 50s, 80s. You know, what are we talking about here? So inevitably, this debate kept on coming back to the domestic agenda, in spite of the fact that it was billed as a foreign policy debate.
It really did, yeah. And I mean, again, this speaks to the fact that, you know, the U.S. economy and domestic issues are going to be the drivers of this election. And we saw it time and time again, you know, with the different points. Both candidates really, you know, whether it be Mitt Romney coming back to the economy or the president coming back to education, they were keen to avoid talking about foreign policy, where there really aren't stark differences.
Okay, well, let's have a listen to one of those exchanges.
Look, I love teachers, and I'm happy to have states and communities that want to hire teachers do that. By the way, I don't like to have the federal government start pushing its way deeper and deeper into our schools. Let the states and localities do that. I was a governor. The federal government didn't hire our teachers.
Governor.
But I love teachers, but I want to get our private sector growing, and I know how to do it.
I think we all love teachers.
We certainly do.
We all love teachers. There was an interesting thing about the question of how you spend your money and how well-resourced the United States is as still the world's only policeman. I mean, there was a time when you had the balance of power between the USSR and the Soviet Union and the United States. And then, of course, the USSR collapsed and in the United States ended up as the world policeman, and the question of whether or not it has enough resources to do the job.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the president again made the point last night that's well known that the United States, you know, spends as much on defense as the next 10 countries combined. And again, you know, the president has used this to play to his refrain on Romney math, or, you know, that the $5 trillion in tax cuts, you know, plus the $2 trillion in additional spending that, again, the defense, you know, department isn't necessarily asking for. And they sparred on this a little bit, you know, with coming to sort of the very, you know, I think the hottest hashtag, right? You know, the horses and bayonets and battleship.
Let's have a listen.
Our Navy is older. Excuse me. Our Navy is smaller now than any time since 1917. The Navy said they needed 313 ships to carry out their mission. We're now down to 285. We're headed down to the low 200s if we go through with sequestration. That's unacceptable to me. I want to make sure that we have the ships that are required by our Navy. Look, this, in my view, is the highest responsibility of the President of the United States, which is to maintain the safety of the American people. And I will not cut our military budget by $1 trillion, which is the combination of the budget cuts that the President has, as well as the sequestration cuts.
I think Governor Romney maybe hasn't spent enough time looking at how our military works. You mentioned the Navy, for example, and that we have fewer ships than we did in 1916. Well, Governor, we also have fewer horses and bayonets because the nature of our military has changed. We have these things called aircraft carriers where planes land on them. We have these ships that go underwater, nuclear submarines. And so the question is not a game of battleship where we're counting ships. It's what are our capabilities?
Of course, the big area that is of concern to both sides is the Middle East. I mean, I heard it said this morning, although I wouldn't necessarily go along with it, that the world is by and large stable besides the Middle East. There are lots of areas of conflict
that weren't talked about.
but the Iran is a preoccupation because the specter of a nuclear power, we have one already in the Middle East, that's Israel, although they never confirm or deny that such is the case. The specter of Iran having nuclear weapons is a frightening one for all Americans.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that the discussion on Iran and Israel really emphasized the extent to which the policies of both candidates are extremely similar. You know, both have set, you know, called on the success and of the economic sanctions and have called for continuing crippling economic sanctions. Both, again, said that, you know, all options are on the table if it comes down to it. You know, both reiterated their support for Israel as we expected. So really no distinction here among the candidates.
One of the challenges we've had with Iran is that they have looked at this administration and felt that the administration was not as strong as it needed to be. I think they saw weakness where they had expected to find American strength. And I say that because from the very beginning, the president in his campaign some 4 years ago said he'd meet with all the world's worst actors in his first year. He'd sit down with Chavez and Kim Jong-il, with Castro, and with President Ahmadinejad of Iran. And I think they looked and thought, well, that's an unusual honor to receive from the president of the United States. And then the president began what I've called an apology tour of going to various nations in the Middle East and criticizing America. I think they looked at that and saw weakness. Then when there were dissidents in the streets of Tehran, a green revolution, holding signs saying, is America with us? The president was silent. I think they noticed that as well. And I think that when the president said he was going to create daylight between ourselves and Israel, that they noticed that as well. All of these things suggested, I think, to the Iranian mullahs that, hey, you know, we can keep on pushing along here. We can keep talks going on, but we're just going to keep on spinning centrifuges. Now there are some 10,000 centrifuges.
We have a sense of when they would get breakout capacity, which means that we would not be able to intervene in time to stop their nuclear program. And that clock is ticking.
We're 4 years closer to a nuclear Iran. And we should not have wasted these 4 years to the extent they've continued to be able to spin these centrifuges and get that much closer. And when I'm president, we'll make sure we bring our troops out by the end of 2014.
One of the areas I expected to be important in this debate would have been, although maybe more economically than militarily, but still in terms of foreign policy attitudes to foreign powers, would have been China. Did China figure large at all in the debate?
You know, it's interesting given the amount of China bashing that has really, you know, been the tone for this debate. Both candidates came out relatively positive on China, you know, saying that they were seeking a partnership, saying that they were seeking China to engage in the world economy and also in leadership with security affairs, but both emphasizing that if China is to do that, China needs to play by the rules. And Mitt Romney again reiterated his pledge to label China a currency manipulator on his first day in office, you know, which actually was He was prompted a bit on that, you know, if that might not spark a trade war.
Yeah.
And he pointed out that, you know, given the size of the trade deficit, China potentially has far more to lose from a trade war than the United States. So there might be some room for the United States to stand a little
tough. Finally, I should ask you, who won?
You know, I think most of the punditry this morning, you know, scores it on the points as a victory for Obama. Certainly, he had more zingers, more Twitter hashtags that came out of it. But really, I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, Mitt Romney took a very conservative approach to the debate, realizing that he probably had more to lose from this debate than he had to gain. And he avoided making any major
gaffe. No banana skins.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Sam Braces of UCD, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Ben.